This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 21st day of February. Well, this week, the United States Department of Agriculture held its Ag Forum in Washington, D.C., and soybeans ran to its highest level since last September. In fact, bean meal posting a life of contract high again. And that was a life of contract high in the settlement price, too. We'll find out more about both of those events as we make our way through this edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists today will include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Jason Clapp of Risk Management Commodities. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Our special guest today, Joe Persaki of USDA NASS in Washington, D.C. Let's begin our discussion with this question, Aaron Curtis, and the rest of the crew. As you take a look at the soybean numbers for the week, and you see a 33.25 cent move in the old crop March, November up 23.25, and you've been pushing this marketplace to a highest high since September. Is there a reason for producers to go ahead and finish old crop sales? Aaron Curtis.
Yeah, I think we continue to reward the market here as we move up. We've seen quite a few beans been moving since fall, Todd, so the farmer-owned beans are becoming less and less. But I think as we look at this market, it approaches $14 here on futures here. We're not too far away from that here, somewhat surprisingly, but I think the farmer kind of continue to reward the market. You know, export sales, again, we're a net positive once again here this morning, and it seems like the trend has been on these weekly export sales days. Anytime we see a net positive, the market wants to rally. Probably looking at a carryout number a little bit less than 150 the way the market is trending. It looks, you know, we did have some cancellations this morning, Undone and China, both cancellations, but we did have some countries come in and offset that, so we did have a net positive once again, and I think markets kind of go back to this old demand rationing theme, Todd, and trying to find a level where we start to see some demand slowing down.
Bill Mayer?
Yeah, I think I agree with everything Aaron said there. I've been kind of telling guys that I think if you're looking at these old crop beans, you probably need to be moving those amounts. You know, if you're going to save anything back, have something there that you can plan on holding back into the summer, because I guess I think we will see harvest eventually start in South America. The beans will get to the port. We will drop our exports, and I think still, myself, we'll see some cancellations out of China. So I think it's a good time to get things wrapped up or at least move down to the point where you can hold on to what you have for a while.
And Jason Clapp, is that the feeling, too, at RMC, where we're looking at a South American crop that's coming on and will turn exports from the United States to southern ports?
Yeah, that's what we're looking for, and I would agree with the previous two comments. You know, continue to reward the market as it goes higher, and let's really capture these margins from our product on growing the soybeans from last year. As we all see the margins starting to collapse for next year, we know it's going to be harder and harder to make these nickel and dimes. Let's lock in prices here and take a good one from the soybean market on old crop beans.
I know, Jason, that you probably looked at this a couple of times and maybe glanced more than once at the numbers that came from USDA's Ag Forum. They say production of soybeans in the United States for the 2014 crop will come on much larger acreage than last year, and that it will be a 3.55 billion bushel crop. That'll give us an ending stocks of 285 million, not this fall, but the following one in 2014-15, with a season's average cash price of $9.65. Of course, we're now looking at a new crop price of $11.53¾. What should producers consider, if anything, from all of those numbers?
Sure. We've been talking, you know, if you can lock in some cash sales for new crop into some decent basis numbers out there, wouldn't be afraid to look at anything like that. And then follow it up, you can look with some put option strategies as a way to hedge a floor out there. But yeah, again, you know we've got positive margins now as far as a farm aspect and thinking, you know, back to my dad and our own farm, We're going to lock in these positive margins whenever we can, and if we will need to enhance that later on down the year with some type of re-ownership, we'll assess it then.
And, Bill, I know you've been watching this pretty closely because you do a lot of crop insurance there. So how do you deal with both the crop insurance and that lower price at $9.65 for new crop soybeans? Because it will be or should be much higher than that for the February crop insurance month.
Yeah, we're averaging about $11.20. Could end up if we stay at the levels we are for another week here, around 11.24, 11.25 even. That's still kind of your best coverage to the downside from a price standpoint on the, you know, the percent that you can cover. So we think that you have to look at that as far as the soybean insurance goes on the maximum coverage and look at it on a cents per bushel basis. And it just really comes out to be good coverage. I think Jason brings up a good point, too, on the new crop basis. I've found that some of the new crop basis is weakening up quite a bit here recently, and I'm not sure that a person shouldn't look at some HTAs or something like that or hedges if you're looking at locking in, which you probably should be locking in some numbers on, at least on your uninsured bushels.
Aaron, I suppose you have some fall delivery numbers for us that you can provide?
I think, you know, when you talk about basis anyway, Todd, I think we're going to go kind of what the trend has been the last couple years. And basis has been pretty firm, especially along the river system here. So, you know, China continues to turn the U.S., at least in the first half of the year. And we already have 170 million bushels of bean sales on the books already. And that number is going to most likely grow as China continues to be an aggressive buyer, at least in that fall period. So I would assume basis levels continue to be somewhat supported. But as far as futures here, the highest levels we've seen since late in December. So I think anything above 11.50, like Jason mentioned, I think you got to look at your margins somewhat. But if you can lock in a profit, I think you got to reward the market with some of these sales on these rallies.
Bill, fundamentally, is there a reason, for instance, export inspections or sales for the week or any other things in the soybean market that tells you that we're about to turn, other than time, and maybe time is the thing that, meaning when we are in time at this point, the thing that you really need to look at?
Well, I think that we're just right now, we're kind of like we are in the first part of September here sometime, where everybody's anticipating this crop down south. And, you know, in South America, and we don't get it. So, you know, we continue to move beans out of the United States, and we're moving more beans than we really need to. So I think you look at two things. I think one is you look at the exports and how fast they are coming to the port and getting out in the ships and that, which it's been kind of slow, although we are starting to see some movement out of there now. And, the second thing I think that you look at is, as I said earlier, if we see some cancellations.
Okay, so futures, by the way, in the March contract, a 13.70 3/4 settlement price in the bean pit was up 33 1/4. November at 11.53 3/4, up 23 1/4. Bean meal up $5.80 at $455.80 a ton. That was a life of contract high and a settlement price that was on the life of contract as well, for the high, that is. And the March bean oil at $40.95, up $1.80. That's off its low, which was a life of contract low made a few weeks ago at $36.80. Does the strength in the bean oil give you any indication that the bean market will remain strong? Or what does? I'm just not sure what to make of that, actually, other than it's been low enough that it just bounced. Bill, do you have an idea?
On the soybean oil?
Oil, yes.
Yeah, I think one of the things that you're seeing is as you start to see an indication on the meal out of Argentina, if the meal is weakening, I think that's a sign that we're starting to see some bean movement in Argentina. And as that has happened, I believe what we've seen is we've seen some of the spreading come back out of that. So I think that may be a little bit exaggerated on the oil side.
And let's turn.
We're seeing people sell the meal and buy the oil back.
Let's turn your attention to the corn market. March corn this week had a high of $4.56.5. It's low at $4.44.5. A settlement price there on the week, up 7.75 from Friday at $4.53. December at $4.64.25 ended 4.5 cents higher. I'd like to poll each of you just to see what you think producers have left in the bin, and just on a percentage basis, more or less than usual, and how much more. And we'll start with you, Jason.
Oh, I would go probably just a little bit more than normal, just because we've been in a downtrending or sideways market. And I spent 6 years in northern Illinois as a grain buyer, and when markets become a little stagnant or slower moving, I always remember that seam farmers almost got bored with paying attention to the markets. So when that happens, they tend to think about other things other than the corn market. And, as a direct effect, you end up not pricing as many bushels as what you might normally do through the course of a winter. So.
And Bill Mayer?
I guess, not to sound like a politician, but I guess we got to define normal. But I think if we're looking at the last couple of years, I think we have a lot more on hand than what we've had the last couple of years, mainly because we put more on the farm and that. Plus, I think the farmers just not sold as much, and the winter has really not helped getting stuff to move. So I think there's a higher percentage of stuff on the farm than what we've had in the past.
And Aaron Curtis.
Well, Ty, we've seen an increase in farmer selling over the last couple of weeks, I guess you'd say, and it's really kind of interesting how on the up days, the farmer's been a somewhat active seller. And in days like today when the market turns lower, he or she cuts off pretty quickly. I mean, percentages is hard to figure. You know, we got some areas of the state still say they got 50% or more of the corn to buy. But kind of gauge it on how busy, obviously, our elevator customers are with hedges. And they've been pretty active, especially at the beginning of the week here. You know, if you get up to close to 460, I think you're going to see, you know, close to 450 cash in parts of Iowa as their basis remains pretty strong. That's going to buy a chunk of corn, I think. We get to 430, 435 in parts of Illinois cash-wise here this week, and that continues to be rewarded. But I think the producer, at least his mindset is on any up days, is going to continue to reward the market, or at least that's been the trend up to this point, Todd.
Well, I have heard of 475 for the cash bids down near Belleville, and that brings me to kind of an interesting thing, Aaron. I'm wanting to know just a bit, because along the river it appears that the strength can be along the river, but it's not exactly for the river bids that they might be sending that back out to other places because of temporary storage. So it appears to me that domestic demand is still outpacing export demand, and I'm wondering if you have any way to whether that means one thing or another to you about the future of the price of corn. So here's what I guess I'm thinking about that is that is it the export market that really charges the volatility in the marketplace, and if it's domestic demand, is that just kind of short-lived and built in already?
Well, I think as far as the export demand, I think, you know, we're still seeing CIF values trading very strong for this time of year, up in the upper 80s, even close to 90 over the March. So I think those values continue to be very strong as the export program continues to be fairly stout. I think the concern as we move into Illinois, of course, is what barge freight's doing. And obviously it's no secret that barge traffic along the Illinois has been pretty challenging here with the weather. So that kind of eats up transportation costs and doesn't make basis quite as enticing here as we move farther up the Illinois River. I think processor market's been fairly firm since harvest, more stagnant here recently as we have seen a producer start to move a little bit. But I think there's still some demand to come along the Illinois River. If you look at the undelivered sales, you know, up around 750 million bushels, there's some sourcing that still needs to be done there. The question's going to be if we can get transportation moving, not only on the barge side, but, you know, rail transportation has been a challenge as well as trucks. So more than anything, we need an improvement in the weather, Todd.
Bill, your view of the landscape for old crop corn sales?
Probably continue to have some opportunities here. I think that you have to be up there, you know, in the more than half your old crop corn sold at these levels, but you look for those basis opportunities and those pops in the futures to continue to sell into it. I feel like probably have some opportunities to get some additional sales made on corn.
Jason, are you the same mind that between now and the planning intentions report and the stocks report, there are opportunities for sales?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I would probably pay attention to the most would be the nearby basis. I think Aaron mentioned earlier logistical issues from northern Indiana, northern Illinois, Minnesota, the Dakotas, with the type of winter we've had and farmers not being able to move grain. I think as you get into the spring and into the summer, you eliminate a lot of those issues and you can almost flood the market with corn. So I think paying attention to your basis here over the next 30, 60 days is probably a pretty important thing for the rest of the year.
Let's bring Joe Persaki into our conversation now. He's been waiting patiently in Washington, D.C. He is with USDA NASS. Joe, thanks for being on the program. We do appreciate that. A lot of numbers came out of the Ag Forum this week. Can you put those into context with what the numbers look like when they come out from USDA NASS later in the year? And that might be the acreage reports. It might be yields. It might be all kinds of things.
Right. It'll be all those, Todd. Because, well, what our friends, you know, both ERS, the committee actually, the ERS, the World Board and such, when they put these numbers together for the world, for the USDA Ag Outlook Forum, you know, those are based on, you know, I would say econometric models. Their view on given where prices are, given past, past behavior of farmers, you know, at this time of year. Now, some of our other guests had mentioned the reports at the end of March. So beginning next week, towards the end of next week, NASS will begin surveying, you know, farmers across the country, you know, asking them their opinions on what they believe they would be planting, you know, this spring, you know, corn, soybeans, you know, for you guys, and spring wheat up north, in the Dakotas and such, you know, to get a feel for that, and then also stocks. So as I tell people always, it's like, okay, well, who knows best? Is it me sitting in Washington, or is it the farmer up there in central Illinois, you know, trying to figure out what he's going to do given the farm bill, given crop insurance and so forth and so on, given prices, because we're looking at past trends. I mean, this year's trend may be different.
And when you took a look at the numbers, were there any things in the trend that seemed off to you?
Well, I can't really argue with the procedures. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the numbers, they are what they are. And I tell folks that we'll see. We'll see when we get in the field and start doing work, survey work, and those reports of the month. You know, nothing, you know, it just people are expecting, you know, more beans and such, you know, given where we are. But like I say, well, I don't know. We'll see. That's all I can tell you.
All right. Well, Joe Persaki is at USDA NASS in Washington, D.C. He's with us here on this February 21st edition of Commodity Week. More from him in just a moment. Aaron Curtis is on the phone line as well at Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. Bill Mayer at Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County. And Jason Clapp from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, all with us for Commodity Week. You can find this program online at willag.org. That's willag.org. You'll also find a way there to sign up for our all-day Ag Outlook, each of them, well, with the exception of Joe, although he may be here by then. We'll be at the all-day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can dial in on Monday at 217-333-7300 to get your tickets for that program.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. Here's Ed Kieser, meteorologist, with a look at the weather forecast from South America.
A mixed bag of weather prevailed across South America this week, and that will continue for at least the next 10 days. As expected, rain frequently fell across western production areas of Brazil, including not only Mato Grosso and Mato Grosso do Sul, but much of neighboring Goiás. The rain is bringing mixed crop impacts, benefiting full season crops, but hurting double crop areas with slow harvesting and subsequent planting. Above average rainfall will continue through at least the next week. To the south, coverage of showers and thunderstorms in Paraguay and South Brazil was less than expected this week, leading to the expansion of stressful dry pockets. Showers and thunderstorms are now starting to increase in coverage, and at least near average rainfall is expected through the coming week, as a few cold fronts approach and stall over the area. This should help later planted corn and soybeans, but the rain is coming a little late to help some crops. The major trouble spot in Brazil remains the eastern areas. It has been dry for weeks and no change is in sight. Full season and second season crops across Minas Gerais, Bahia, Sao Paulo, and far eastern Goiás are in big trouble. Expect crop losses from this part of Brazil. In Argentina, seasonably cool and wet weather dominated this week. More of the same is expected going forward. At first, the rainfall was helpful to crops, but the expected additional rainfall will become unhelpful as surpluses of 5 to 10 inches are already common over the last 5 weeks. Damp conditions and standing water lead to potential disease and pest issues. Alternating long periods of dry and wet weather in Argentina this season have not benefited crops.
Our thanks, of course, go to Ed Kieser, meteorologist, for his look at the South American weather forecast. Here are the way the numbers finished up for the week in Chicago at the CME Group, and we'll give you the changes. These are Friday to Friday. On the weekly, the March corn had a high at $4.56.5, low at $4.44.5. Its settlement price at $4.53 was up 7.75 from the previous Friday. December at $4.64.25, up 4.5. March beans this week, a high of $13.72.25, the low on the week at $13.35.5. It's the highest high, by the way, since September. The March settled at $13.70.75, up 33.25 cents. November beans up $11.53.75 on its final trade, 23.25 cents higher. March bean meal at $4.55.80, up $5.80. March bean oil at $40.95, finished $1.80 higher for the week. Soft red winter wheat at $6.09.75, up 11.25. That's the third week higher in the March contract. July up 3 weeks in a row as well, at $6.09.25, 8.75 cents higher. April live cattle at $141.45, up 35 cents on the week. March feeders at $170.70, up 22.5, and lean hogs at $99.35, finished $3.17.5 cents higher. Remember, you can always find us at willag.org. That's willag.org. This is Illinois Public Media. This, of course, is the February 21st edition of Commodity Week. Let's continue our conversation now with Joe Persaki from USDA NAS. So, Joe, let's go through some of the numbers real quickly. This production number says corn at 13.985 billion bushels, ending stocks at 2.11 billion. Season's average cash price at $3.90. One of the numbers I'm kind of interested in and don't know that you'll have much insight into, but the ethanol figure that helped them get to the 2.11 billion was 50 million bushels lower than the current USDA WASD figures. I know NAS does not come up with those numbers, but is there a good explanation for why?
And on that, I mean, I'm sure that they being Jerry Norton and the guys down in the World Board, they're looking at, you know, all available information, you know, and trying to make the best estimate they can. That's all I can say on that.
Bill, do you have a question for Joe Persaki?
Yeah, I think, Joe, I'd like just to ask, we had a Jason and I were at a meeting the other night, and a question from the audience came out. Do you think that the first quarter feed and residual especially could have maybe been exaggerated because we had such a big hole to fill there, and that when we get into the stocks report here for the second, you know, the end of the second quarter, could we see maybe some of that feed usage or the feed residual, I should say? Could there be surprises there possibly?
Well, I don't know if I can say, you know, I can't, you know, pre-guess what the numbers will be at the end of the month.
Right.
But, you know, Scott Irwin and Daryl Good and Dwight Sanders, you know, Good and Irwin from U of I and Dwight from Southern Illinois, they did a review of all the grain stock stuff that, you know, NASS puts out. You know, and they have some concerns. I don't know if the word's concerns, but they suggest that some of that goes on, I believe. You know, you have consumption of new crop before the new crop actually, you know, begins, you know, bookkeeping-wise for USDA. So I don't know if there's going to be a surprise, but, you know, that possibly could happen.
They also suggest maybe that one of the problems is that the final production figure, if it happens to be off outside of the deviation very much, or maybe skewed to one end or the other, that creates a problem with the grain stocks because the two have to be justified. The grain stocks comes off the subtraction from the final production number, right?
Right. Yeah. Because they also mentioned that because like on soybeans, because if they reference in their paper, because soybeans. You know, we basically have a really good idea with beans because either you export it or you crush it, and there's a little tiny bit on use on farm, but not much. Whereas corn, we don't have that good of an accounting of what happens to the corn, and then you guys are exactly right. It all gets lumped into feed and residuals. So, we do the best we can, you know, on the surveys. You know, like right at the end of the year, we pretty much take what the farmers tell us in our December survey. And so, I always say, you know, the more farmers respond to our surveys, you know, the better that number is going to be. So that's some of the concerns they had was about corn.
Jason, you have a quick question for Joe Prasaki?
Sure. I'm going to go back to some of the numbers that came out earlier today, and mainly the yield numbers. Some of the clients I talked to today thought those were pretty generous as far as a 165.3 on corn and a 45.2 on beans. And, Joe, as we start to look forward to your reports, do those fall along the lines of what you guys are thinking for trend line type values, or are those just numbers?
Very quickly, Joe.
Yeah, because the trend line is probably right there. You know, because last year I think the trend was like they started out at 156, and we pretty much, you know, ended in that, not quite there. But, you know what I'm saying, they're just running a straight trend over the last 20 years. So, yeah, it was taken down a little bit by 12, but that's all they're doing. So, and like I tell people, okay, a trend is what it is, and we'll see what happens in July, first part of August, out there in the field.
Hey, thanks so much, Joe.
Yep, thanks.
Joe Prasaki with USDA and NASS out of Washington, D.C., joining us here on Commodity Week, along with Aaron Curtis of Midco, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, and Jason Clapp of Risk Management Commodities. He is in Lafayette, Indiana. And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.